from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum, we meet two fiction writers. First, Bay Area-based award-winning writer Shobha Rao will join us to talk about her debut work of fiction, An Unrestored Woman, a collection of stories centered around India and Pakistan after partition. Then, veteran Native American author and National Book Award winner Louise Erdrich will join us in conversation. We'll discuss her latest novel, La Rose, the third in an award-winning trilogy. Forum is up next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this hour of the Forum program. Each story in author Shobha Rao's collection centers around the tumultuous 1947 division of British India into modern-day India and Pakistan. Set in vastly different parts of the two countries, from stark refugee camps to the lush verandas of the British Raj, the stories paint a vivid picture of the human cost of the partition. And we welcome her to this hour of Forum, to this first segment of the second hour of Forum. And I want to mention her collection of stories. It's a debut collection, and it's called An Unrestored Woman. And say with, a little backstory here in full disclosure, Shobha was a student of mine, came to me with some stories, and neither of us would have imagined, even though I liked the stories and was drawn to them, and thought she was a talented writer, that she'd be a Catherine Ann Porter literary fiction award winner and also an Elizabeth George Foundation fellow. And so congratulations on
all your
success. It's
Thank
wonderful.
You so much.
She was a very good student, too, I should add. Let's talk about the setting of this, though. The partition. I mean, you weren't even born during the partition.
No, I wasn't. I was born after the partition. But it's such a traumatic event in the lives of and the region of Pakistan and India that it was has always been in my consciousness, and it continues to be quite an event that inhabits the lives of people from that region. So you can't escape it. One can't escape it. So I grew up very much knowing and understanding the trauma of partition.
Well, I'm not usually prescient, but I was drawn to these stories, and I think when I first read them, I said they reminded me somewhat in a different vein and in a different time element of Jhumpa Lahiri. But you've been influenced by other writers that I wouldn't have expected, like Roberto Bolaño.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Bolaño taught me how to be conversational in the writing and to sort of approach the slightest to the greatest moments with the same respect and dignity. And he really was a sea change in my writing life to encounter his work.
Well, you have you write beautifully, and I know you've been told that. You write poetically in vivid prose, and these stories also, I should mention, are intertwined. I mean, there's a kind of sense of a carpet here that's woven very closely, stories, in fact. I went back to particularly the first two stories, and you realize you've got one character that leads into the next story with that character and so forth.
Well, I did try to – I paired the stories. And the reason I paired them – so basically I wrote one story and then I would lift a major or minor character from that story and then place them as a main character in the second story, in the paired story. And I did that because I wanted to really to follow the path of trauma, the trauma of partition, the sorrows and the sort of displacement, all this violence and brutality. I wanted to follow it through time and space and through the generations. And I read a study, well, more of a synopsis of a study that said the survivors of the Jewish Holocaust had not only the brains of the survivors been altered, but the brains of the children and the grandchildren of the survivors had been altered. And so I thought, well, how can I sort of explore that in the trauma that was caused by partition? So that's why I paired the story. It's just to follow its path.
I heard my friend Adam Johnson talking over the weekend about trauma and narrative, mm-hmm. and you can almost sometimes perilously recognize that when you're writing about it, you can trip into it.
Yes. Yes, it's actually a joy, I think, in some ways, cruelly, for a writer to trip into it and think, oh, this is, here's a conduit. You know, here's a way to explore things that maybe have even haunted me all my life. But here I have a portal through which to explore all these themes that I've been sort of grappling with.
Well, the themes often have to do with women and misogyny and certainly the difficulties that women face, especially under the kind of power that comes into their lives that affects them in ways that they can't even measure. And when that new power comes into play, it means often that women and children are those who are the traumatized ones.
Absolutely. And always the most vulnerable and always left sort of unprotected. Violated. And so I really thought, you know, this is a population that I want to pay especially careful attention to. Often ignored, certainly their paths or their journeys in a time of immense conflict and siege.
We're talking with Shoba Rao, Bay Area writer of An Unrestored Woman. Kelly Link says, provoking, ferocious, moving, splendid, gorgeous, and essential. She's been getting those kind of reviews. Kirkus Review calls the work stunning and relentless. It's been a far greater literary success than you would imagine when you came to me and said, will you read my stories, Professor?
Absolutely. Life is strange and miraculous.
But it's been a really great ride, huh?
Yeah, it really has, especially having a short story collection, which, you know, everyone says, oh, well, they don't, you know, you can't publish a short story collection anymore. Well, it turns out you can, and it can have leave a splendid sort of mark.
A little bit about your background. You left India when you were 7 years old. When did you know that you were a storyteller?
Well, I think I found solace in stories the minute I landed in the United States. That's how I survived the initial years, by reading and learning what the landscape was of this country. That's how I sort of survived the first 2 years, was through reading. And then eventually you realize, well, hey, what about telling my own story and maybe, you know, informing another human being's experience? Maybe I can reach someone, sort of escape this loneliness by telling a story instead of just reading it. So that's how I launched. And I would say, you know, it wasn't really until high school or beyond. I wasn't one of those writers that, you know, wrote their first story at the age of five. It certainly was a longer road for me to become a storyteller.
Well, most of the stories do take place, of course, in South Asia and India and Pakistan, but you do have characters, I mean, it spans generations, it spans centuries, and you have characters who come here to the United States. In fact, one of the most compelling stories is of a young woman who comes to the United States, leaving all that fractiousness and facing a molestation here and so forth. Talk about where the stories come from. I mean, what's the origin of them? Maybe you can give us one example.
Well, certainly if we take that one, for instance, it's called Unleashed. I think what I did to access these stories is really just deepen and excavate my own journey. So my own migratory journey, my own grappling with the forces that confronted me when, you know, the alienation, a kind of loneliness, trying to understand this new country, this new land I was in, the new peoples. And the beauty and the cruelty that I saw around me, I deepened those experiences in order to access these stories. And
so it all came from that personal well.
Absolutely.
But yeah. You must have done some research. I mean, you have a story, for example, in a refugee camp, and it's vivid. I mean, there's scholarship behind those kinds of things, isn't
it? Yeah. Yeah. I did do some reading about partition and certainly women's experiences during partition. I read some oral histories. But basically, as a fiction writer, it was truly just closing my eyes and trying to imagine the cool of the tent in a refugee camp, maybe just the bitter cold of the tent in a refugee camp, or the dirt under the women's feet as they shuffled, you know, from between the camp tents. So really, it was an act of the imagination, truly. And it really drove me to some incredibly ravaged and lonely places, which, you know, that's when we're most alive.
Is it an escape from those places when you write fiction, or do you find yourself more deeply embedded in them or immersed in them?
It's a state of immersion in order to escape it. Because you go there, you go into that dark place, and then when you come out, it's an incredible cathartic event. And so, yeah, traveling to these places that may be harrowing and oftentimes are, is its own reward.
We're talking again with the author of An Unrestored Woman, Shobha Rao, and the collection is out, and it's having quite an impact. It's also, there's a lot one can learn from your writing, and that you obviously learned about conflicts between Hindus and Muslims. Speak about mm-hmm. that. I mean, because that's really the world we're immersed in here in your work.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I didn't emphasize, greatly emphasize that divide in the— Of course, it's acknowledged, and it's, you know, I had to have characters who were from a religious tradition. But what I really tried to do, Michael, was to enlarge the scope of the stories and to really universalize them so that, you know, these are stories of women. It didn't matter if they were in 1947 India, Pakistan, or if they're, you know, in Syria right now. It's I really wanted to explore the experiences of women that who are going through incredible, incredible global forces and are sort of helpless.
You wanted that universality.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let me actually invite those. This is a half-hour segment. I'd like to hear from listeners, especially listeners who have had some experience or memories of the partition. It would be fascinating to hear from you or just about the differences in terms of what we just broached, Hindu and Muslims, which continue to be vast, certainly, and very different from, let's say, the ethnic geographies in many other parts of the world. I'd like to hear from you, and you can join us now at our toll-free number. We invite you to do that. That number is 866-733-6786. Again, feel free to call us now. This is a half-hour segment, so if you'd like to weigh in and join the program, call us now, 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org is our email address, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, but we do invite your involvement into the program. There's a good deal of... Well, why do you call it an unrestored woman?
Well, the women who... So basically, during the conflict of partition...
You could have called it unrestored women, right?
Yes.
You decided an unrestored woman.
Well, an unrestored woman is the title of the first story. So anyway, during the partition, Hindu women were kidnapped and taken to Pakistan and vice versa. Muslim women were kidnapped by Hindu men and brought to India. And so... In 1949, I believe, there was India legislated the recovery of these women. And so they would send in soldiers and try to bring these women back, find them and bring them back. And these women that were brought back were called recovered women. And so I thought about that and I thought, well, you know, you can recover a person. You can, you know, go in, pluck them out and bring them back. But to restore them, to restore him or her to their original state seems to me an impossibility. And I wanted to explore that.
Let me explore just with you a minute. I don't want to give away too much plot here and everything.
Sure.
But in the opening story, Neela, who has a husband who is essentially, it's almost like a kind of lament one hears from a lot of women nowadays in the contemporary American world we live in. I mean, he's just a kind of cold guy and doesn't know how to give and doesn't know how to be intimate and all the rest of that. And she goes to, like I said, I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but she goes to one of these camps for widows. I mean, widows were actually put aside and turns out her husband isn't dead. But what develops there, of course, is a relationship with another woman. And it's an intimate relationship. It's the intimacy, both physical and otherwise, that she longs for. A very compelling story. But you think about how something like that was, I mean, still has taboos attached to it. But at that time, in that place...
Right. And I think that that's exactly what drew me to it. Because it's not that, you know, it didn't exist, whether it's, you know, an intense relationship between two women or even if, whether it's sexual or otherwise. And so what really drew me to it was this taboo quality and to, you know, sort of give Neela even the slightest bit of agency for a small bit of her life, to give her the dignity of being fully human in that one moment.
And then I'll just give a little tease, because it turns into kind of a Yentl motif for people who know who Yentl was. Let me bring some callers on here. We do have people who want to join us. And Perfuma, you're first up. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. So thanks for taking the call. So I would like to say that when discussions related to partition come up, it's mostly the Hindus and Muslims that they talk about. But I believe genuinely that there was a Sikh community which was affected largely because of this partition, because the state of Punjab was the epicenter of partition. And the Sikh community suffered a lot. So I haven't got a chance to read her book, but I believe the author has given due attention towards the massacre of Sikhs. That is one thing. And second thing I would like to point out is, it's strange how whenever there is a genocide or whatever it is, women are targeted, be it present-day Syria, like she said a while ago, or back in the 40s, or even in the Middle Ages. Women are always targeted. It's really funny how, or it's really sad how, you know, men, regardless of what the reason is, we just try to pounce upon women to try to assert authority. So, yeah,
that's good things you're bringing up, Rafi. Thank you for that. The Sikhs certainly were tremendously affected by the partition. In fact, Bharati Mukherjee comes to mind because she's written about that.
Absolutely. And many of the stories do talk about the Sikhs and how their population was affected. Absolutely. And as to the question of women, I think women over time have come to stand and symbolize the kind of purity of a nation, its obsession with its own sort of chastity and its virginity. It's women have come to occupy this strangely symbolic place in the minds of men, where they are the ones that represent the conquering. So by raping or other sexual acts, they see it as a conquering of a nation, to conquer its women. And so this has, obviously left women incredibly vulnerable. And I, very much set out to confront that.
But again, that's a universal, rape Absolutely. As a political weapon. It was in Bosnia, it was in Rwanda,
yes.
It's all over
yes.
every continent, especially during wartime. But you also, I think, make us mindful of, the treatment that has gotten a great deal of publicity, maybe some say too much of the spotlight on India Today and the treatment of women, being raped and within the country by their own, countrymen.
Sure. And as it should. It should be more talked about. It should be, women and children, quite honestly, should be given the, a sacred space to come and reveal. There's a lot of shame associated with sexual assault and rape and violence in India. And that's a society, it's a social issue that must be confronted.
We'll bring more of your calls on. And Tune from Alameda, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I appreciated and resonated with the point the author made about how she mentioned the trauma experienced by the women in Syria and currently all over the Middle East mirror somewhat the Great Partition in Southeast Asia. I'm originally from Rangoon, Burma, and someone who grew up in the Bay Area public school system, I'm remotely aware, vaguely aware of the partition, but not very much. And I do resonate with that point she made about the current refugee crisis, how a lot of that we can learn from history of the Great Partition. And I wanted to know what documentary resources you can direct me to learn more about that Great Partition, a really remarkable period in human history.
Uh-huh. Well, the University of California, Berkeley has the 1947 Partition Archive. I think the website is just actually 1947partitionarchive.org, and they have a lot of documented oral histories from that time, from people who actually lived through the experiences.
Is that the Bancroft?
Yes, mm-hmm. I think it is. I'm pretty sure. And then there's so much literature, fiction, otherwise. I specifically read a book called Borders and Boundaries, The Lives of Women in India's Partition, and that was really informative.
That was before you wrote the fiction?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Toon. Good to hear from you. And here's Mike, who says an interesting observation. He says, it strikes me that the most famous Indian authors come from the diaspora, like the Naipaul brothers. Has living here given Ms. Rao a perspective on partition she would not have had she lived her life in India?
Sure. I think I have a sort of objectivity, maybe a remove, that lets me sort of look at this unblinkingly and with a distance that, as a fiction writer, I think is quite revealing, and allows me to enter places that perhaps I would not have otherwise had the courage, or maybe would not have even known to enter. So certainly being an immigrant and then seeing it from afar has its advantages.
I should mention, we put a link up to the Partition Archive, just so listeners know that. Here's Ben, who says, what are some pitfalls that you learned to avoid as a new writer?
Oh, wow. Where to begin? Certainly, I learned to back away from the melodrama, the sort of dramatization of events, where the event itself was full of drama and beauty, and I didn't have to add to it in any way. You know, I just had to tell it. And so that was a long time in learning that. And certainly dialogue has always been a thing that I've grappled with, and I think I will for, you know, all my years to come. Just sort of leaving it alone, you know, the story.
Letting it go.
Yeah, letting it go, letting it live and breathe, not trying to smother it with you know, words and big words, just to let it be and let it breathe, yeah.
Now, English was your second language?
Yes.
Which is always fascinating to me. Because you do have beautiful command of prose, and I said your language is very poetic and vivid. I want to talk about how that transforms itself. I mean, especially when you grow up learning English as your second language. I mean, I've always been marveled at people like Nabokov and Conrad, you know, fourth, fifth language. But it's any thoughts about it, reflections?
Well, you know, I think that the silence that comes from being an immigrant and not knowing the language is what develops this sort of, poetic sensibility, where or a deepness of observation, because you're living in you're inhabiting a place that's silent. You can't communicate, and so what you do is you nurture the inner life and the inner dialogue. And I think that's where your the keenness comes from.
So good to have you with us. Congratulations.
Thank
on
you for
the
me.
Success. An Unrestored Woman, Shobha Rao, and she'll be participating in the Bay Area Book Festival in Berkeley on June 4th and 5th, and we'll be hearing from another Indian writer, but not from South Asia. Native American writer Louise Erdrich joins us for the second segment in this hour. Stay tuned for that. She has a new novel called La Rose. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.